What happens after the heroes go home? After the victory parades and the monuments are built, what becomes of those left behind in the rubble? In 415 BCE, as Athens prosecuted a brutal war against neighboring city-states, Euripides staged a play so unsettling that it still makes audiences uncomfortable today. The Trojan Women doesn't show us glorious battles or noble warriors. Instead, it forces us to sit with the women waiting to be enslaved, the children marked for death, and the smoldering ruins of a civilization erased from the earth. The year before the play premiered, Athenian forces had conquered the island of Melos, slaughtering every adult male and enslaving the women and children, standard practice in ancient warfare, yet rarely acknowledged in heroic narratives. Euripides made his audience watch what their own soldiers had done, only with Trojans standing in for their recent victims. The play remains one of the most frequently performed Greek tragedies worldwide precisely because its central questions refuse to age. Who pays the real price of war? What happens to moral principles when power faces no constraints? And can there be meaning in suffering that seems utterly senseless? Unlike other Greek tragedians exploring honor or divine justice, Euripides dismantled the foundations themselves. He questioned whether rational order existed, whether gods were just, whether victory proved righteousness, whether civilization's values withstood violence. His characters present compelling but contradictory claims, leaving irresolvable tensions. Hecuba simultaneously challenges the gods' existence while acknowledging humanity's need for cosmic order. Most radically, Euripides centered women's experiences in male-dominated society. In The Trojan Women, female concerns, family, identity, sexual violence, maternal bonds, become the lens for examining war itself. When Hecuba declares Greeks invented barbarian evils, she inverts the cultural hierarchy justifying Athenian imperialism. Living through the devastating Peloponnesian War, Euripides forced audiences to confront their own capacity for cruelty. Most Greek tragedies follow a familiar arc: conflict, crisis, resolution. The Trojan Women abandons this entirely, presenting escalating catastrophes without resolution, only continuing loss. Gods discuss punishing the Greeks, yet justice never materializes. Instead, blow after blow, Polyxena sacrificed, Cassandra dragged away, Andromache's infant condemned. Throughout, foot imagery traces their journey from freedom to slavery, from perfect dance to forced marching, from subjects with agency to transported objects. Hecuba enters, lying on the ground, physically broken. Once queen of Troy with 50 children, she now faces slavery with most dead and her city burning. Her strength lies in articulating suffering while questioning its meaning. O support of earth, Zeus, or air, whoever you are, difficult to know, she prays, revealing both religious doubt and desperate need for cosmic order. Has Troy fallen through divine justice, human cruelty, or mere chance? This tension captures something essential about human responses to catastrophe. With each revelation, Hecuba comforts others while voicing moral outrage. When her grandson's broken body arrives on Hector's shield, she transforms grief into condemnation. The Greeks fear this? This child? Strange fear. O Greeks, inventors of barbarian evils! Her greatest moment comes confronting Helen, systematically dismantling her self-serving narrative. When Helen blames the gods, Hecuba cuts through. When reason fails, it's convenient to blame the gods. As Troy burns and she marches toward slavery, she maintains moral authority and clarity. Through her, Euripides suggests true heroism lies not in battlefield glory, but in maintaining humanity when everything human has been stripped away. Andromache enters carrying her son Astyanax, believing Hector's death was her greatest loss. Then Talthybius delivers devastating news. The Greeks have decreed Astyanax must die, thrown from Troy's walls to prevent future vengeance. Andromache faces an impossible choice: watch her child die or leave him unburied to serve her new master. Euripides' psychological realism makes this scene unbearable. Andromache briefly imagines hiding him among the spoils before recognizing the futility. Her farewell contains literature's most heartbreaking lines. "Why do you cling to me with your hands? Hold fast to my dress, like a young bird under my wings. Hector won't come back, taking his famous spear from the grave to bring you salvation." This intimate moment exemplifies Euripides' genius for humanizing tragedy through specific, tender gestures. The scene culminates in a debate: is death or slavery preferable? Andromache argues, "The dead feel nothing," while Hecuba insists, "To live is to hope." Euripides refuses easy answers. Through Andromache's plight, Euripides forces his audience to confront war's most indefensible consequence: killing children to prevent future conflicts. When we hear contemporary debates about collateral damage, we're hearing the same logic that condemned SDNX, a logic Euripides exposes as morally bankrupt. In the play's most charged scene, Helen defends herself before Menelaus, with Hecuba as prosecutor. Helen claims Aphrodite compelled Paris, that she tried escaping, and that Troy's threat forced Greeks to develop military excellence. She asks Menelaus to blame the gods, not her. Hecuba systematically dismantles these arguments, questioning whether gods would act so irrationally, and noting witnesses saw Helen enjoying her status in Troy. Most devastatingly, Hecuba challenges the premise itself. When reason fails, it's convenient to blame the gods. This debate raises deeper questions about human responsibility. Are we pawns of instincts and social forces, or accountable for our choices? Euripides suggests that blaming external forces often excuses self-serving actions. Helen reframes herself as victim rather than instigator, while Hecuba insists human choices drove events. Menelaus promises to execute Helen, but the audience knows he'll ultimately forgive her. This dramatic irony underscores how easily principles collapse before beauty and desire, acknowledging the very passions that drive conflict. The emotional climax arrives when soldiers return carrying Astyanax's broken body on his father's shield, the warrior's protection now bearing the child who represented Troy's future. Hecuba's lament ranks among Greek tragedy's most powerful passages. She washes his wounds, an intimate ritual emphasizing both love and violence's physical reality. "O beloved hand, how like your father's, yet you lie slack at the joints before me. And dear mouth that often boasted to me, you have died a shameful death, thrown from walls." Her grief alternates between addressing the child directly and acknowledging his absence, a psychological reality of mourning. The funeral indicts Greek military logic. Hecuba calls out the absurdity. "The Greeks fear this? This child? Strange fear. You Greeks invented barbarian evils." This reversal challenges the cultural superiority Greeks use to justify their actions. Euripides shows how war perverts sacred rituals. Astyanax should have died old, with proper rites performed by his children. Instead, his grandmother improvises. The shield becomes his bier, marriage garments become his shroud. Astyanax's broken body becomes an unanswerable argument against war's justification. The Trojan Women concludes with Troy's complete destruction and the women's forced exile. This ending offers no catharsis, only catastrophe's completion. Talthybius announces the city will be burned entirely, erasing all physical evidence. The women have lost husbands, children, freedom, and now even the ruins that might preserve memory. Hecuba describes dust rising like a smoky wing to heaven, making Troy invisible, while the chorus declares, "Troy's gone, and the name of Troy shall disappear." This emphasis on invisibility captures cultural erasure's existential horror: the fear an entire civilization will be forgotten. What makes this ending powerful is its refusal of conventional resolution. There is no divine intervention, no moral lesson, no redemption, only the trumpet sounding as Talthybius leads the women away. Yet paradoxically, by refusing to look away from war's devastation, Euripides achieves something profound. What power destroys, art remembers. Over 2,400 years later, we still know Troy's name. We still hear these women's voices. When contemporary directors stage this play during modern conflicts, Vietnam, Iraq, Syria, they tap into this tradition of witnessing. As long as humans wage war and turn away from those who pay war's real price, this masterpiece will continue serving as both indictment and lament, a voice insisting we look, we see, we remember.